how to write Yiddish and German. And I vaguely remember sitting at a table with him and writing a couple sentences, and that was just a couple of months before he died. So learning and the desire to learn and having an education was something that was drilled into me from the very beginning. I remember my grandmother, my mother's mother, saying to me that when they came to this country, they were very poor. And my grandfather would go with the pack on his back, as she called it. But she said, we may not have had very much, but we always managed to pay the Rebbe and for tuition. That she was very proud of the fact. And even my mother was given Hebrew lessons to learn how to daven.
Can you remember about any of the health care in your younger days? Were you healthy?
As far as I know,
your
I've always been.
What did your father die from, do you know?
He was 35 years old. He had high blood pressure, complicated with a kidney condition. I have since been told that had he lived later, with all the medical advances and everything, he would have survived. High blood pressure runs in both sides of the family. He died at 35. His mother died 16 months later, as I said, supposedly of a broken heart at 56. One brother died at 42. Another brother died at 50.
And brother at what age? Brother at 52?
50.
50.
But his father lived to be 76. One aunt was 78. One aunt was in her 80s. So how you determine longevity, I don't know. As I say, on my mother's side, her oldest sister died at 68. Her youngest sister died at 48. The next uncle died about 70, and my uncle Abe died at 78, almost 79.
And your mother was...
And my mother is now 89. She will be 90 the 6th of May.
Did you say her oldest sister is 68, and who died at 48?
Her youngest sister.
Youngest sister.
Do you get a chance often to visit with your mother? I mean, is she all
before,
right now?
Before she went to the nursing home, I used to go up to Hartford. Last year I wasn't there because she was living with my sister and there wasn't room and there were family complications. I'm going up there Passover.
Mm-hmm. You say she's 91 now?
No, she's 89. She will be 90 the 6th of May, God willing. Mm-hmm.
And her health?
All her life since I was born, they say she hasn't been too strong, but she makes it.
Good for her. Do you remember about anything as far as medical care or a doctor?
Well, all I remember is I was born in my grandmother's house, not in the hospital, on Miller Street in the hill. On Center Avenue, not too far from there, is where Pauline Hirsch's father had his newsstand, Pauline Milch. Pauline Hirsch Milch. She writes book reviews in the Chronicle every once in a while. She went to Hebrew school when I did. I taught her youngest brother.
Your mother was born in this country too?
No, my mother came here when she was 5.
My
sister was born in Montefiore Hospital up on Center that went down to make a driveway. My brother was born at home in West Elizabeth. I don't know whether my mother didn't make it or he came too soon or what happened. As a youngster, about the only thing I ever had was measles, chickenpox. My brother and sisters, I think, had those two plus whooping cough.
Do you remember your adolescent years? Or any of the were you interested in sports or recreation or
when I
fun?
When I went to high school, I was connected with some clubs in school. But you see, because of the Hebrew school connection, I'd get out of high school at 3 o'clock, get on the streetcar, and go down to the Hebrew Institute. Because from the time I was From the time I was 12, I went to Hebrew school 2 hours. From the time I was 16, I went to Hebrew school 2 hours and taught 2 hours, which meant that 4 hours, 5 days a week, were spent at the Hebrew Institute.
Now, would you say you did all this teaching and studying of Hebrew because you liked it, or because you needed the money, or your mother made you?
My mother didn't make. I didn't do well at piano, so I stopped. My sister didn't do too well at violin. She stopped. My mother felt that where education was concerned, she'd always say, learn whatever you can. You never know when it'll come in handy. And so she would always try. If we didn't make it, that was our choice. My brother didn't like Hebrew school. That was his choice. She didn't force us. And apparently, I liked it. The going was my liking Hebrew. The teaching was liking to teach, plus the fact that I got some money. And it helped. And in those days, money was important because my mother was a widow. My father, dying at 35, hadn't left too much, and my mother did not work.
Did you have any other occupations? Any other jobs?
Well, when I was in high school, one of my teachers used to pay me to mark Latin papers, like 50 cents an hour.
My
brother had a paper room. My sister made crepe paper flowers, things of that kind. We didn't go away to the camps in the summertime. We did our playing around the street where I lived.
I asked before about your adolescent years, any recreation?
Just the normal clubs and the group that I met at Hebrew school and the clubs and the associations and the
any
friends.
Any special club that you can recall?
No. And I had friends, you know, we'd go, in those days you went to their house, they came to your house.
Who were some of those people? You've mentioned a few that you went to school with.
Well, for instance, Milt Sussman was in high school when I was at Chenley. At Hebrew school, when I went to Hebrew school, it was the same time as Bernard Kaplan, Hyman Hoffman.
Bernard Kaplan, K?
K-A-P-L-A-N. Abar Cohen, Hyman Hoffman, David Bonder.
David who?
Bonder, B-O-N-D-E-R. He's now in Israel. His father used to have a little store on the 1200 block of Forbes Street.
Did you ever take any vacations? I'm talking about, you know, growing up.
Before high school, before the end of high school, I guess about the only one I had was when my mother took us all to Ligonier. We stayed at a farmhouse for a week.
How old were you then?
Oh, I don't know, somewhere around 12, 13.
After your father died?
Yeah, all of this is after my father died. Before my father died, when I lived in Pittsburgh, my vacation consisted of being sent to my grandmother's for a week. That was considered a big trip, 22 miles.
When you mentioned that your mother didn't work and you earned a little money and your brother had a paper out, did your grandparents help support
you?
No. So your father left a little bit, then you were able to get along.
We have never gotten any help from any member of the family.
Could you contrast the neighborhoods that you can remember then and now, economically, politically, or culturally?
Well, all I know is that when I went to public school, we didn't make any issues of segregation or this or that. Everybody went to school, the school in the neighborhood where he lived. And if a colored person sat next to you, fine. And if an Italian person sat opposite you, fine. And we didn't seem to have any trouble getting along. And we all went to school together. I went to high school with Elizabeth Randolph, who was colored. Her father was an attorney in Pittsburgh. Later on, he won a debating contest, and her brother, and represented Shenley High School as far as Harrisburg. I suppose colored people had a hard time getting a job, but so did Jewish people. When it came to discrimination, I was subjected to Jewish discrimination. I remember people saying you couldn't live in Mount Lebanon. When my mother went to Atlantic City with my aunt one summer, you stayed at certain hotels. And that was it. But we played together. I had colored friends, I had Italian friends, and they were friends. I didn't, what would I say? They knew that I went to synagogue on my holidays. They went to church for their special days. We could still be friendly, but no one ever thought of intermarriage and the way things go today.
Now, as you were growing up, did you belong to any organizations
in
the community?
Pitt, I belonged to the Delta Phi Epsilon sorority.
And what kind of, was that a social?
Who were your friends in that, do you remember?
Originally, let's see. Rebecca or Belle Gordon, who was very active down at Anathan House teaching crocheting and knitting, was my sorority sister. Mm-hmm. Henna Sadransky, a social worker who lives in Maxon Tires. Sidransky.
What was her first name?
Hannah, Hanna. She worked until she retired for the Jewish Family and Children's Services. My closest friend was Jeanette Marks, who died in 1966. Jeannette Marks, Marx. It was her mother who was instrumental in getting me to teach Sunday school at Road of Sholem after I graduated Pitt.
And what years did you teach there?
I taught for about 12 years after college until about 1940 or 41. I taught mostly pre-con and confirmation, plus 1 year they had a Hebrew class after Saturday classes to experiment. 1 year they had Hebrew classes like 2 days a week. I tried that. I have taught adult classes with Milton Sussman as the director at the Y.
How long, when did you teach that?
I think you'll have to ask Milt.
How long did you teach that, remember?
No. 1 year, a Mrs. Levin of Hastings Street, who was very active in Hadassah, decided that she wanted to see if Hadassah women could learn Hebrew in a direct method without using any English. I suppose you'd call it a forerunner of some of these audiovisual programs they have today. We didn't have slide films and all the equipment that you have. And so she had the story of the three bears printed up in Hebrew on little sheets, and in what was then the men's lounge on the first floor of the Y building on Belfield Avenue, we had a course.
You were teaching the women of Hadassah?
Uh-huh. Senior Hadassah. And I was not allowed to use any English. And Mrs. Levin would sit in the back of the room. So here I was. I had three ashtrays filled with sand, three different sizes to represent the three bowls of porridge. And I got myself three chairs the same size. And then I'd go
and use the word for Abba, and I'd raise my hand real time, Ima, and then I'd go, Akata, and that was the way. And I would have to act out all the things that happened and demonstrate. And by the end of the course, my class could read Hebrew and tell the story of the three bears in Hebrew.
So they learned that way.
Mm-hmm. It can
Did
be
like
done.
It that way? Mm-hmm.
I learned Hebrew at the Institute in what they called the Ivrit, Hebrew method. I-V-R-I-T, B apostrophe, I-V-R-I-T. It means Hebrew in Hebrew. It was the same idea that they were using in high schools at the time when they taught French in French. Hebrew teaching follows the same systems that the public school does, and the methods sometimes follow too.
So you learn that way and you talk
I learned that way. When I first began to teach, I wasn't supposed to use any English unless it was an abstract term that would take too much time trying to get the idea across. Then I could use an English word. Otherwise, I had to act, I had to draw anything, bring in a picture, do anything I could to get the idea of what I was trying to explain. If a student said, does it mean so and so, I could say yes. But I wasn't supposed to give the Hebrew, the English word.
Now today, how
Now
they
today,
do?
You see, they have the audiovisual method. And it is, for the most part, started with memory and the emphasis on hearing a tape and trying to get correct pronunciation. And from learning sentences, while they look at a chart showing what's going on, they memorize this story or a dialogue. Then they take it apart and they go into the grammar and use sentences varying a word from singular to plural, from masculine to feminine. But it is not too far from the old Hebrew method that I used if you add to it all the modern equipment.
You did everything that an electronic
The teacher
thing
had to do everything. I would go through all kinds of magazines and I'd cut out pictures. If we were going to have a lesson on the parts of the body, the parts that I couldn't point to, I'd have pictures. If we were going to have a lesson on wearing apparel, I'd have pictures. Because you can't always wear all the clothes in a classroom or point to them. And we managed. And there was emphasis on repetition and review. And I think that we turned out students who knew more then. I say that advisedly.
Now, how many years have you been associated with this school?
I started as a student in 1918. I began to teach in September of 22. 6 years I was in Columbus, Ohio. All the rest has been with the Hebrew Institute. Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, are you still teaching classes?
No.
I
stopped teaching 4 years ago.
And what is your position now?
Bookkeeper. I became bookkeeper because of the Depression.
Here, you mean? They couldn't afford to hire someone, so you took
that
job too?
No. Mr. Abrams was looking out for me then, too.
May I go back? You said except for 6 years in where?
Columbus, Ohio.
We'll have to find
1945 to 1951.
45 to 51,
mm-hmm.
Columbus. What were you doing there?
I taught Hebrew in the Columbus Hebrew School.
Why did you move there?
That was a personal matter. I'd rather not talk about.
I'm sorry. And in Columbus. Now, you were a bookkeeper here before or just recently?
No.
You did some of that before?
The bookkeeping started way back in 1932 because of the Depression. I hadn't been teaching very long when came the crash.
came the Depression. Financially, things were bad at the Hebrew Institute. Teacher salaries were cut up to 50%. Let's say I was making $150 a year teaching Sunday school at Rhoda Shalom, we got a 10% cut. So I taught for one whole year, like 34 Sundays for $135. Now they get $19, $20 a Sunday. My $1,800 a year as a Hebrew teacher was cut in half. Some of the professors, the teachers who taught the teachers training classes at the Institute left because they couldn't get along on the salary. I wasn't going to be able to manage on $900 either. And at that time, Pearl Breskin, who was Mr. Abrams' secretary, had just married Harold Weinberger, who worked for MGM in Washington, D.C., and she was moving there.
How do you spell her maiden name?
B-R-E-S-K-I-N. Her brother, Joe Breskin, is in real estate in Pittsburgh still.
Who'd she marry?
Harold Weinberger. She has died. They lived towards the end in Los Angeles.
But she moved where?
To Washington, D.C. Before she went, she trained someone to take her job. And at the end of 2 weeks, Mr. Abrams decided that she wasn't the girl for the job, and he said to me, if you take it and you continue to teach, I'll give you $100 a month. Depression rate. Fortunately for me, I had been friendly with Pearl for years, and I'd meet her since Hebrew teaching began at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I would meet her and we'd go to lunch, and if she'd go to town to make a bank deposit, I'd go along, so I knew where she made bank deposits. She'd go to Charlie Rosenblum's office to get some papers. I'd go up there, so somebody knew me there. So that from that standpoint, it wasn't too hard for me to take over because I had learned to type after I graduated college. Mr. Abrams never dictated, so I didn't need shorthand. The problem was with bookkeeping. So I write to Pearl in Washington, D.C., Pearl, I'm taking over the job. Please tell me what to do. Back comes a 5-page onion skin typed letter. Do you remember the little square book that I used to take out on the left-hand drawer? When money comes in, you open that book and you make a receipt. And then at the end of the week, you open that great big book that I had and you write them straight across. And then she would give me all the things that happened. And at that time, Morris Nieman was an accountant and secretary of the school. And he would come up every Sunday and give me lessons. And I would say, I don't understand all about debits, and I don't understand all about credits. Finally, one day he said to me, did you take algebra when you went to high school? I said, yeah. Okay. Did you do problems with X's and Y's and Z's in them? Yeah. Fine. Then just remember, this side is X and this side is Y. Now, you put all these things in the X column, you put all these things in the Y column. And that's the way I did bookkeeping. And to this day, when an auditor comes to go over the books of the Institute, if he's a new fella, he looks at me in amazement and expects that things are going to be in a mess because I can never explain anything to them like real bookkeepers do. I can't say, well, I credit this and debit this and that. I always say, I put it on this side, and then I put this one on this side, and at the end I add them up, and this side has to equal this. But there has never been an auditor after going over my books who hasn't said, well, Ms. Chotiner, you do a good job.
You just don't have the terminology.
I don't have it. And so let's say at the end of the first year, Morris Nieman said, now you watch me, or I'm going to make a trial balance. He set it all up. The next month he said, I'll watch you. The third month he says, do it by yourself.
And to this day, I make trial balances, but I always have to look and see what I did the month before.
I always check it out.
When it came to closing the books, the same way. First year he did it. Second year he watched me. Third year, do it yourself. And then, of course, over the years, an auditor would come in and say, "Miss Trotner, why do you do that? You know, you could save yourself a lot of work if you just do it this way." And someone else would say, "Well, why don't you put this in a red pencil and that'll save you writing three lines?" And that's the way I know bookkeeping. And so in 1971, when I had to choose between teaching and bookkeeping, because I was still doing both, there was a little friction between me and the educational director. That's not Dr. Abrams. And so I decided to give up the teaching and continue with the bookkeeping. And today I work 3 days a week doing bookkeeping. And occasionally a child comes in and needs some help.
You don't turn them away.
No, right now I, once a week, the daughter of one of my former students comes in and I help her. I can't help that.
Can you tell us, you know, something about the beginnings? You mentioned names of this institution. Whose idea? Do you have any recall on
that?
It
was probably Rabbi Ashinsky. It was his idea. There may be literature around here that
now,
we could find.
This
is a community school. The idea being that anyone who is not affiliated with a congregation wants to give his child a Jewish education comes to the Institute. Originally, if you couldn't afford it, because the Jewish people believe that every child is entitled to a Jewish education, could come reduced rate, no rate. But it was a mitzvah to give a child a Jewish education and you turn no one away. So that over the years, we've had people come to the Hebrew Institute and be confirmed at Road of Shalom, like Margie Oringer, whom I taught. We've had people come here and they're members of B'nai Israel and they graduated or were confirmed there, like Mrs. Myrtle Fisher's children.
All right. Now, is this a school every day?
It is not an all-day school in the sense of a parochial school. We do not teach any of the subjects taught in a public school. We're not like Hillel. We're not like the community day school. We teach only the religious subjects, which means that the children come to us after they have been to public school, with the exception of the kindergarten.
Or a nursery. Do you have a nursery school?
Yeah, I call it kindergarten. They begin at 3 1/2 and go to 5 1/2.
Now, do they come during the day?
They come, let's say, like from 12:45 to 2:45, 4 days a week. Originally, the Hebrew Institute ran 5 days a week, all Hebrew, no English.
After school hours?
It was always after school and in the morning on Sunday. Sunday morning, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but all in Hebrew. In other words, subjects that are now taught in a Sunday school, like Jewish history, all about the holidays, we had all in Hebrew.
When did that stop?
When the Institute moved to Squirrel Hill in April of 1944, and in addition to Mr. Abrams, who went from principal to executive director, and the school brought in...
That's Solomon.
No, this is still Mr. Israel Abrams.
Oh.
And Dr. Solomon Abrams came in first as the director of religious activities and then as educational director.
How did he come in first, did you say, as what?
Director of religious activities. He came from the Beth Shalom.
And what now he is what religious that? Director.
That was in 1944 when the Institute moved to Squirrel Hill.
And now he's what?
Then when his father retired and became the director emeritus, Dr.